This is WSBT's Community Update on 96.1 WSBT.
Good morning. I'm John Hoffman. Coronavirus cases in St. Joseph County continue to increase. Deputy Health Officer Dr. Mark Fox spent some time with WSBT 22's First in the Morning on Monday.
Our numbers, continue to climb. We have our highest number of active infections in the county, highest seven-day average that we've had throughout the pandemic. Having said that, our hospital numbers still look fine. We're in the mid to high 30s really through the weekend. So in terms of hospital capacity and ICU, we're fine. There's a lot of active cases running around the county right now. We're hopefully staying at home in the county right now.
That's right. Does this mean that we are headed in the wrong direction, or is this just a matter of more test results coming back?
There are a lot of people that want to suggest that it's more test results that happen to get younger, teens and young adults that are mildly symptomatic. Certainly we've increased access to testing, and that's great. But our percent of positive tests has increased. So if it were all a function of increased testing, our percent positivity should be going down. It's not. And we're starting to see the secondary transmission from teens and young adults to older people, so to parents and to others in the household. That's the piece that's concerning. Hospitalizations and death tend to be lagging indicators, so I'm worried about what happens when the older generation becomes infected from the teens and young adults and who will get sick out of that.
Just yesterday, Indiana reported its second highest single day of positive cases. Are we headed toward a shutdown, or could we better handle things to not get to that point?
There were comments recently from the CDC director about the importance of wearing masks, and he suggested if everyone wore masks for, I think it was 4 to 6 or 4 to 8 weeks, that we really can control this. I think that's optimistic, but I do think that that's our best strategy. And I think that, if people were really religious about wearing masks and making prudent decisions about their public interactions and interactions with other people, that we can turn this around again. Hopefully without shutting down like we did back in March.
Are you seeing more compliance with masks?
I think with the national retailers taking a strong stand, even though we haven't had leadership at the national level from elected officials, the retailers enforcing that is a huge step for us. And I think that will increase compliance across the county.
A big issue, the time it takes to get the results from tests. How is that in our area?
The bulk of the tests in our area still are being done by LabCorp, and their turnaround time, while it's increased somewhat, it's at about 3 days, which is manageable. The bigger challenge is we have some national labs serving clinics and patients in our area where the turnaround is in excess of 11 days. Yesterday we had results that range from 11 to 18 days.
Wow.
And that makes contact tracing pointless. People have completed their isolation period before they ever get a result. That's not the way to control the spread of this virus.
Do you think that we are going to be able to fix that problem? Are there
It's not a quick fix. It's a fix that should have been implemented 4 months ago in terms of building the capacity. Over time, we've had challenges with access to swabs and reagents. Those largely have been solved, not entirely, but it's really the machinery capacity to run the volume of tests that seems to be the backlog, and that required months and months of planning.
Parents have to make the hard decision of whether they keep their kids home to do virtual learning or send them for in-person instruction. Is it safe at this point to send our kids back to school?
I think it's possible to set up environments where it is safe. I think certain schools and school districts may be more challenged in terms of their ability to ensure that there's adequate physical distancing, ensure that they can de-densify areas for meal delivery. And so there are a lot of challenges that go into that. We're working with all the area districts really to try to come up with a way to do that as safely as possible. As I keep saying, we can't eliminate the risk, but we can take reasonable steps to minimize the risk. And we know that especially younger elementary school age children, not only tend to have fewer complications from the virus, not none, but fewer, they're less efficient at spreading the virus to other people. Not so true at the high school level.
You have mentioned that before about the younger students and the spreading of the virus. Why is that?
The thought is that there's a certain receptor that we have on our cells that actually binds the virus, and that's what leads to both the infection and the ability to transmit it. And those are present in lower numbers typically in younger children. We develop more of them as we get older. And so that seems to be why it's protective in younger children.
Does that mean that we can let our younger children maybe do a little bit more, have more play dates, have a little bit more freedom?
Well, that's a reasonable conclusion, because they also seem less likely to transmit it to family members. And certainly, it doesn't eliminate the risk, but yeah, it's probably safer for your elementary school kids to have play dates than your teenagers, for all sorts of reasons.
So a viewer had a good question. When someone tests positive for the virus, gets retested, and then tests positive again, how is that classified? Is it two positive tests, or is it one, which is the reality?
It counts as two tests. So when we look at the total number of tests done in St. Joseph County, there are two tests that are done. In terms of cases, it counts as one case. So We go through line by line and sort out who is this their second test, and we segregate those out.
Okay, if you have been exposed and you test negative, should you stay home 14 days and then retest later, or are you okay to return to work and normal life once you get that negative result?
That's a big depends. So it depends on the time frame in which you got tested and what prompted the testing. If the testing was just exposed, if you had it and I was exposed and I went to get tested, but I haven't had any symptoms, the time frame in which I went to get tested matters. If I get tested tomorrow, it's probably not going to be a reliable test. If I were to get tested at day 5, that's the window of the best reliability. So the timing matters a lot. Also, the reliability of the test is best based on whether or not you're symptomatic. We don't recommend that people go get tested solely on the basis of an exposure. We want to know if they've had truly prolonged close contact. We want them to quarantine. Other people really just should monitor for symptoms, but don't, and be prudent about their interactions, but they don't necessarily need to completely shut down and restrict their interactions to quarantine.
Dr. Mark Fox on WSBT 22's First in the Morning. The grip of the coronavirus could soon be getting tighter on some families. A couple of economic protections have ended or could end soon. The moratorium on evictions has expired in Michigan and is set to run out in Indiana at the end of the month. On top of that, the extra $600 in weekly unemployment money is set to end this week.
Those programs ending are a big concern for many families. It's also on the radar, though, of United Ways in our area. Leaders of local chapters in Indiana and Michigan want people to know that they're here to help you.
The United Way of St. Joseph County saw a skyrocketing of needs when the pandemic hit. Its president and CEO, Laura Jensen, says local food pantries saw a 300% increase in need, and organizations providing rent, utilities, and mortgage help also saw a big jump.
It's because there's just this panic of, I'm not working, but I still have bills to pay.
The United Way of Southwest Michigan is seeing the same trend.
We saw people show up at food trucks or food mobiles that had never needed food before. You know, you're seeing people that are showing up for rent or housing assistance that never needed it before.
President and CEO Anna Murphy and Jensen say the additional unemployment money has led to a slight reprieve at food pantries this month. But with people still out of work and the extra unemployment money gone, Jensen's scared about what will happen.
Once that's gone and the reality sets in, we're nervous.
The challenge with all this is that we just don't know. We've not been through this before. We don't know what some of this is going to end up looking like.
The unknowns are why they're continuing to encourage you to donate money to your local United Way. All chapters have COVID-19 relief funds, with all money going to partner nonprofits that can help you directly.
This is an opportunity for the communities to continue to come together.
If you're going through COVID-19 right now and have experienced either job loss or loss of home or any type of loss or insecurity, you're not alone. You've got an entire community behind you. You've got an entire community full of resources and supports here for you.
To get free assistance, you can call 211 in Indiana and Michigan or get connected online. Jensen and Murphy encourage you to look into all resources the United Way offers, because you might be surprised about the help that you can get.
WSBT 22's Caroline Torrey reporting. South Bend Community Schools have developed a new plan for how their students will return to class. Instead of certain students starting with face-to-face classes, all students will start the year with e-learning. The corporation changed its plan after hearing feedback from the community.
Originally, the plan was for students and their families to choose in-person or e-learning, and that's how the students would start the year. But after feedback from the community, the school corporation decided e-learning only is the safest option at the moment.
So the first recommendation is to postpone face-to-face instruction and move all students to e-learning. The second recommendation we have this evening is we will talk about what a phase-in plan would look like.
South Bend School Corporation's new plan is to have e-learning between August 12th and August 28th, focusing on social-emotional learning and coronavirus prevention. Between August 31st and September 4th, students of all grade levels will gradually start face-to-face learning if that's what the student and their family want to do. On September 8th, all students that want to learn in person will physically be back in school. South Bend parent Maria McKenna says the planning for in-person and online learning shouldn't follow a date, but should follow the coronavirus cases.
Having a date of 2 weeks that we will be doing e-learning within the corporation and then moving to a face-to-face plan seems a little premature in the sense that what we really need to be doing is following the science.
South Bend parent Melinda Fountain says the plans are too vague for families to figure out what type of learning their students will do when the start of school is in 3 weeks.
There needs to be more time for a systematic, well-informed, coherent plan to be developed and communicated and for families to be able to make an informed choice.
The National Education Association South Bend says they proposed a plan to South Bend schools to have students attend school virtually for the first 9 weeks of the school year and to have all extracurricular activities suspended during that time. Leaders of the organization say they're concerned teachers and students' lives will be at risk if they return too early. As of right now, there's no school board work session for next week, and the South Bend School Board will vote on the back-to-school plan on Monday, August 3rd at 5:30 p.m.
WSBT 22's Erica Finke reporting. When schools shut down this spring and switched to distance learning, the most vulnerable kids were the most impacted. The nonprofit research group Parents Together conducted a survey in May showing 4 out of 5 parents of special needs students said their children weren't getting all their services.
He has autism, ADHD, sensory processing disorder, epilepsy, asthma, anemia.
Jen Huggins' son is a rising first grader at McKinley Elementary in South Bend. And because of his asthma, the stakes are high.
If he gets this, he's very likely to be hospitalized.
Huggins has to toe the line between worrying about her son's health and advocating for what's best for him academically. She says because her son has autism, social interaction is vital to his development. E-learning took that away.
We've had major regressions.
Huggins says McKinley did a good job adjusting to e-learning in March. And she says her son's teacher and aide even dropped off supplies. But because she doesn't have a laptop at home, Huggins asked for a school tablet. After weeks of trying to do e-learning on her phone, the school got her a tablet, but it didn't work.
It was a lot of, hey, this isn't working, and they're like, well, just keep trying. And I'm like, I can't keep trying, and I'm like, I can't even get him to sit down.
Well, let me say good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining me.
Huggins took her frustrations to Talks with Todd, which are in-person or virtual sessions hosted by South Bend School Superintendent Todd Cummings, where he answers parents' questions. Here's how Huggins says that went.
I get a lot of, oh, shoot us an email and we'll talk about it in person.
Cummings says he prefers not to answer specific special education questions at Talks with Todd because he doesn't want to identify students.
I would encourage her to email me her specific student information and we'll track down what she doesn't feel like we're getting right.
And when Huggins reached out over email,
I understand, but at the same time, I got no answers.
I asked Cummings why Huggins should believe the district will fix her problems if she reaches out a second time.
I would say that it's my ability to want to follow up. And so while I don't know who she is and I can't recall any specific email, I want to make sure that we're getting her question answers.
Over at Nooner Elementary, another district school, Nicole Willard's rising third grader had some struggles this spring as well. Like Huggins, Willard says the teacher and paraprofessional working with her son were responsive and creative throughout the spring. But also like for Huggins' son, the switch to e-learning led to her son regressing.
We saw a lot of like the first time like self-inflicted scratching and that type of thing. He even started biting again.
Willard's son has autism, ADHD, sensory processing disorder, and several other disorders.
Our son had gone for over 3 years with like 3 or 4 different therapies to nothing.
But unlike Huggins, Willard saw a better response after aggressively advocating for her son's needs.
But all in all, they've done mostly what we've asked.
WSBT 22's Tolly Taylor reporting.
The views expressed on WSBT's Community Update are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the host, WSBT Radio, its staff, or management. Join us again next week on Community Update on The Sports Leader. 96.1 WSBT.